The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's start off with, Jerry Taylor was determined to face her diagnosis without shame and to help others like her live with dignity, leading the way through Alzheimer's. And there's a picture of a not very old-looking lady, probably in her 60s, I would say, in front of an ocean scene with waving green grass behind her on the dunes. Very pretty picture. It began with what she saw in the bathroom mirror. Jerry Taylor padded into the shiny bathroom of her New York City apartment and casually checked her reflection. Immediately, she stiffened with fright. She didn't recognize herself. That was late 2012. She was 69 years old and recently retired. For some time, she had experienced a sensation of clouds coming over her. There had been a few hiccups at her job. She was a nurse with a master's degree in public health who moved into administrative positions. Once she was leading a staff meeting when she realized she had no idea what she was talking about, her mind like a stalled engine. She got past the episode by quickly handing off the meeting to a colleague. Certain mundane tasks began to stump her. She kept pulling the wrong cord on the blind in the bedroom. She got off the subway at 14th Street, unable to figure out why she was there. So yes, she had inklings that something was going wrong with her mind. But to not recognize her own face, that was when she had to accept the terrible truth. She confided her fears to her husband, Jim Taylor, and made an appointment with a neurologist. The doctor listened to her symptoms, took blood, and gave her a standard cognitive test. She was asked to count backward from 100 in intervals of 7. She had to say the phrase, no ifs, ands, or buts. He asked her to remember the 3 common words. When he called for them later, she knew only one. He gave a diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment, a common precursor to Alzheimer's disease. She understood it was the football of what would become. Alzheimer's had struck her father, an aunt, and a cousin. She had long suspected it would eventually find her. Alzheimer's is a degenerative, incurable, and democratic in its reach. Worldwide, nearly 44 million people have Alzheimer's or related dementia. People live with it for 8 or 10 years on average, although some last for 20 years or more. The disease moves in worsening stages to its ungraspable end. That is the familiar face of Alzheimer's, the withered person with a scrambled mind marooned in a nursing home. But there is also the beginning, the waiting period. She never cried. The beginning is like purgatory, said Jerry, an effervescent woman with a round face and a froth of swirling hair. In her healthcare career, she had seen Alzheimer's in action. Now she would live it. Those who learn they have the disease often sink into piercing black grief. They try to camouflage their symptoms from a dismissive world as they backpedal from life. But Jerry pictured Alzheimer's differently, with defiance and through a dispassionate, unblinking lens. Crossing into the pitted terrain of Alzheimer's made her question her purpose. Was she limited to backward glances, or could this be a new beginning? At first, Jim had trouble adjusting. He wouldn't meet her eyes. To unfreeze the chill between them, Jerry gave him a pep talk that put the present in softer perspective. She told him, "This is something that is going to develop, but it hasn't developed yet." Yet something big had happened. Yet they were still alive. Still together, with more mileage in their future. So they moved forward into their reordered lives. She couldn't know the speed of her decline. It is different with everyone. The impact appears to be determined in part by the amount of cognitive reserve each person has, the mental capabilities that one accumulates over a lifetime. She felt she had plenty of that, at least she hoped to. So, her doctor put her on Aricept, a drug designed to improve cognitive performance. It seemed to sharpen her thinking, especially in the morning, but she couldn't really gauge how much good it did. Her belief system was optimism. She never cried. Depression, she knew, would lead her down alleys she didn't want to visit and held nothing for her. Instead, the disease made her hungry for living. She vowed to plunge ahead and accelerate her longtime interest in photography. See friends more. She aimed to live the most fulfilling day she could at what seemed the bleakest possible time. Struggle to keep up. Jim drew up an Alzheimer's to-do list, a way to get things started. When to tell the kids and the grandkids how long to keep the couple's two homes, advancing care needs, end-of-life decisions. And there's a picture of Jerry with her husband, although this is in 1993. She was a very attractive, dark-haired lady. He is a tall, slender gentleman with a streak of gray in his hair, and they have, looks like, three boys and a daughter. Jerry was advised not to tell people of her condition. Friends will fall away from you. The Taylors didn't agree. It was my decision to let the disease be alive in my life, Jerry said. You don't have to just throw in the towel. They waited 6 months after her diagnosis. Then in the summer of 2013, she told the children. They were not surprised. They had detected glitches in her memory, and now they knew their origin. She postponed informing the grandchildren and moved on to other relatives and friends. Some accepted the news, others quibbled. One friend combed the internet for solutions and zeroed in on coconut oil. Jerry drank it for a few weeks, detecting no benefit, and then moved on. Although others could hardly see it, she knew better. She was slipping, the disease whittling away at her. Certain words became irretrievable. Sentences refused to come out. Belongings vanished. Keys, glasses, earrings. I know the tide is going out of my memory, she would say. She had trouble with time. The concept of how long it takes to do something has been lost, she said. Her new best friend was her iPhone. She fished it out maybe 20 times a day and scrolled through the calendar and the notes she'd made to herself. In March 2014, she went to the Caring Kind organization in Midtown Manhattan. She enrolled in some programs, including photography workshop. She signed on for Memory Works group that engaged in mind exercises. The moderator said the game would not cure anyone or forestall their decline. They were just there to have fun. Name words starting with the letter B. Name foods starting with the letter M. The best part was not having to mask her shortcomings. The chumminess among these strangers was amazing. Everyone's laughing, she reported, and everyone is happy they are with people just like them, who can't get the words out. Sitting there in the bubbling ambience, she would sometimes think, we shouldn't be this happy. It was as if they were all high on Alzheimer's. Coping strategies. Jerry became watchful when she was walking. Her gait had changed. She felt as if she were weaving, one wrong step away from whirling onto the floor. It was worse than she talked while walking. Once she stumbled and fell while conversing with friends, her new rule, talk only if necessary while walking. One day she was driving in upstate New York and she bumped into another car. Not long after, she was driving with Jim when she came upon some road work. A flagman motioned for her to stop. Instead, she continued onward, feeling an irresistible urge to speak to the flagman. She couldn't explain her odd behavior. That night, Jim suggested that she ought to stop driving, that she was using poor judgment. She lashed out at him, told him he used poor judgment all the time, drove too fast, tailgated. But the next day, once the weight of inevitability had settled in, she agreed to tut back and drive only when absolutely necessary. A friend showed her the Find My Friends app on her iPhone. I hope this doesn't offend you, the friend said. No offense, Jerry replied. I already got it. She had set it up with Jim, allowing him to track where she was through their phones in case she got lost and had to be rescued. She was a different person with Alzheimer's, tugged back and forth across the borders of the disease. One day they were one way. One day things were one way, and then they were another. The fluctuations would lead her to question herself. It's the fraud complex that Alzheimer's people have, she said. You have good days and bad days, and when you're having a good stretch, you think, am I a fraud? But then the disease would clear its throat and remind her. Some nights she would walk in her sleep. She felt as if she were moving at half speed. She lost interest in buying clothes. Food also mattered less to her. She had trouble keeping up in a conversation. And when I'm talking to friends, I'll prepare, she said. Do some research. Like, make sure I ask about their latest granddaughter. One thing nagging at her was finding purpose in her life, a purpose to replace her career. She loved her work. She never wanted to simply walk away to the sidelines. Photography had been a sideline for 30 years, but now she could really devote time to it. Birds were her avid interest. She pasted photos on cards and gave them as gifts. When she immersed herself in photography, the world around her seemed to relax. With her birds, there was no need to scrabble for the right word. She didn't have to talk to them. For me, the disease doesn't exist when I'm taking pictures, she said. From the front lines. The Caring Kind Caregiver workshop began in the training room. There were 8 participants, Jim among them. The moderator told the participants that eventually they would need support too. You can only bend so far before you break, she said. She invited sharing. Driving came up. A woman said she got nervous when her husband almost ran a red light and stopped only because she yelled. Afterwards, she confiscated his keys. He got furious. She relented. They were still hashing it out. Next, the moderator said she wanted to try an exercise. She handed everyone 2 sheets of paper. Each contained a star drawn in double lines. She asked them to draw a line between those double lines, tracing the outline of the star. Once they finished, she asked how they felt about the experience. Back came their answers. Boring. Annoyance. Then she handed everyone a small mirror. Now, on the second sheet, she wanted them to position the mirror so they could see the star in the reflection, and then trace the star again while looking only in the mirror. The point was to let them experience a taste of what it was like to have dementia, to promote understanding and empathy. As he fumbled his way through the star exercise, Jim said, "This is like driving a U-Haul trailer in reverse." The results were appalling. Lines scooting off over the place. Again, the moderator asked how they felt. Frustrated. Disoriented, a piqued woman asked. "So this is how they feel, people with Alzheimer's?" The moderator replied, "I would put that back to you. What do you think?" The woman was quiet. She got it. "Yes," she said softly, "I guess it must be." Sharing the journey. Jim read a newspaper article about an early-stage study for an experimental drug. Jerry traveled the Internet and learned that part of the trial was underway at Yale New Haven Hospital in Connecticut. Soon she was in New Haven for cognitive testing. The results placed her in the mild stage of Alzheimer's, the appropriate group for the trial. A PET scan confirmed she had amyloid buildup in her brain, another prerequisite. This felt like hope, and it had a potent allure for her, the possibility that the drug might negotiate some sort of truce with this disease. She wouldn't know whether she received the drug or a placebo, but because of the way the trial was structured, the odds of getting the treatment were high. Either way, she would be entitled to the actual drug after the year-long study period, assuming it was effective. Meanwhile, in February 2015, the Taylors took a winter break in Florida. They were invited to give a talk about living with Alzheimer's at a church that Jim's sisters belonged to. They had at first been hesitant, but if it went well, perhaps it was something they could keep doing. Maybe how they were figuring out their disease could help others. 3 dozen people squeezed into the room. Jerry sat in a chair. When she stood too long, she got tremors. Jerry and Jim told about the way the disease waited on them, how they avoided the lockdown that people with Alzheimer's went through, how they chose forward as the only sensible direction. The small details drew good laughs, how Jerry kept confusing their toothbrushes and finally threw away Jim's because she'd figure out whose it was, even though, as she put it, there were just the two of us. She gave tips on how to communicate with someone with the disease. Focus on one subject. Never ask several questions at the same time. When a friend felt her with multiple questions, it left her baffled. The audience was hushed and rapt, hearing an aging couple tell how they were torn up and united by a disease. A man wanted to know whether she did crossword puzzles. She said she didn't. They were too frustrating. Someone else asked, What do you want to hear when you tell someone you have Alzheimer's? I love you. Anything I can do, I'll do, said Jerry. The acceptance is more important than the particulars. When they finished, the applause went on for a while. In March 2015, Jerry returned to New Haven for her first monthly infusion of the trial drug, called aducanumab. Biogen, the manufacturer, had recently announced that an analysis of 166 patients had shown positive results. The drug slowed cognitive decline and reduced plaque in the brain. Experts saw the data as encouraging. Of course, other drugs had offered initial promise only to be discarded as false leads. In April, the doctor sat with Jerry as she lay outstretched, an IV needle in her arm. She knew about the parade of failures for Alzheimer's drugs. At this point, the drug remained a question mark. It would take years to know its genuine worth. "How are you feeling?" he asked. "Fine." "No itching?" "No," she said, hopeful. It was her inner optimism, her desire to become a way out, to locate a way out. Jerry and Jim gave several more talks on Alzheimer's. They were becoming apostles for how to live with the disease. But she needed to do more. She wanted to see strategies identified and shared for navigating the everyday mundanities, for wrenching survival out of this disease. In August, Jerry met with two caring, kind staff members. She gave her pitch. She didn't want a traditional support group. She wanted a group to share strategies, a peer-driven Alzheimer's tutorial. "We don't want to be done to. We want to do." Karen Kine set up a series of workshops to swap tips for living with early-stage memory loss. The Taylors then met with Connecticut chapter of the Alzheimer's Association and told them of their ambition to brush off the stain of Alzheimer's. They learned that the association offers to do presentations at companies. Corporate executives first say they don't think they have anyone affected, and then the association shows up and there are 80 to 90 people willing to listen. The stigma again, the denial, people hiding it. "If it stays hidden," says Jerry, "people don't develop the strategies to compensate for the deficits. They just slowly pass into a state of inability." The Alzheimer's Association staff members agreed. They mentioned a woman who couldn't remember where different dishes were stored, so she put glass doors on her cabinets. And the husband who worried with his wife would get lost when she went shopping, and he wouldn't recall where she was wearing. So now they wore shirts of matching color. Jerry Taylor listened to all of this, and then the associate's CEO said she wanted Jerry's help. "Come and speak. Become one of their champions. Maybe become a representative to the national organization." Jerry's face crinkled up. She began to cry. For what she had wished more than anything was for people with Alzheimer's not to live in shame, but in ability and to learn ways to carry on. The woman was telling her she wished for it too. More than 3 years had rolled by since Jerry hadn't recognized her face in the mirror and began to wonder what would fill her days. Now, with her involvement in the Alzheimer's Association, here was the answer. This would be her second act, something that drew on her healthcare career, helping others deal with the darkness of Alzheimer's. Having purpose was a stabilizing force, and Alzheimer's itself, she realized, could be her purpose. Jerry Taylor continues to work with the Connecticut and New York City chapters of the Alzheimer's Association. She is a national spokesperson for the organization, sharing her story to raise awareness of the disease and advocating for more Alzheimer's research. And now for a little bit of humor at the end of these stories. Keep your hands and feet to yourself. 7-year-old son: "Dad, she's kicking me." 9-year-old daughter: "Am not. I was just high-fiving him with my feet." Now a little bit of humor. Sure, his gags are cringeworthy, but that just makes growing up around him more memorable. Dad jokes: "You've been warned." And there's a picture of a dad standing in front of a charcoal grill, flames kicking up, dead chicken on the chair behind him, and singing into a spatula. My father is a proud practitioner, of dad jokes. Gags so corny they're guaranteed to make you groan while he grins with glee. Dad can reel off awful gags with the best of them. "What do you call a man with a rubber toe?" "Roberto." But his specialty is something even more maddening. For example, when I was young, I chose a car trip with him to broach a prickly subject. "Dad, yesterday..." Suddenly my father broke into song. "Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away." I continued. "At school, I got into trouble with..." "Dad, oh, we got trouble right here in River City, with a capital T that rhymes with P that stands for pool." "No, Dad, stop." "In the name of love." For this Father's Day, we ask our readers for their favorite dad jokes. Here are the sometimes funny, sometimes eye-rolling inducing an apology and almost always sweet stabs at humor that folks had recalling their childhoods fondly. And I do apologize for my horrible off-key singing. When I was 12, my father told me a terrible story that had happened at the gas station that day. I was pumping gas when I noticed this small dog digging up a puddle of gasoline off the ground, he said. All of a sudden, the poor thing started running around the car as fast as he could. He kept running and running until he finally just dropped to the ground right in front of me. I gasped. Oh, no, was he dead? Dad shook his head. No, he just ran out of gas. Dad was quite pleased with himself over that one. Bill Woodman, Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Every single year, when we're getting the garden ready, I can be sure that Dad will say, I'd like to grow seedless watermelon, but I can't find the seeds. Christopher Fish Bean, Selling Grove, Pennsylvania. I grew up hearing my dad tell a joke about a Mrs. Dunn, whose son, Timmy Dunn, had left Ireland for America, never to be heard from again. She discovered that Mike O'Malley was leaving for America and asked Mike to look for Timmy and tell him to write her. Well, Mike looked for Tim everywhere he went, asking many a man whether he was Timmy Dunn, but to no avail. Then one day in a men's room, a man walked out of the stall. Mike asked him, Are you Dunn? The gentleman said, Yes. Mike replied, Well, why don't you write your mother? Well, my 12-year-old brother heard Dad tell the joke with the 100th time. All of a sudden, he started laughing. I finally got it. Susan Wall, Lynbrook, New York. One night, the phone rang, and Dad answered it. On the other end was an obscene phone caller. Dad listened for a few seconds before telling my mother, It's for you, and handing her the phone. Tonya Brantley, Evansville, Indiana. My dad's favorite joke is inedible. Joe is a new man on a construction crew. First day on the job, he opens the lunchbox and mumbles, Oh no, peanut butter. The next day, Peanut butter again? This go on for days until another worker says, Why don't you ask your wife to make a different lunch? Here Joe replies, I'm not married. I make my own lunch. Whether or not anyone else laughed, Dad certainly did. Ronald D. Steinholtz, Green Bay, Wisconsin. When my dad got out of the Army, a friend gave him a job as a diesel fitter at a ladies' undergarments factory. On Dad's first day, the friend took him to the production line where we'd be working. The friend explained that a diesel fitter, my dad's responsibility, would be to pick up each garment as it came off the line, look it over, and then hold it up and announce, Yep, diesel fitter. At least that's the story my dad told 1,000 times. Mary Beth Martins Coble, Lexington, Virginia. As my sister and I were counting the cows in a pasture, Dad glanced over at the herd and said, There are 127. How'd you know? We asked. He replied, I counted their legs and divided by four. Decades later, my kids give me the same look I gave my dad every time I pull that same gag. George Brand, Tallahassee, Florida. My mother was hard of hearing and wore a hearing aid that she removed at bedtime. My dad would wait until she'd put it on her nightstand and say, Do you want to go to sleep or what? Not being able to hear, she would inevitably respond, With what? And that, my dad joked to me, numerous occasions, is the explanation of why I came from a very large family. Mimi Wright, Cincinnati, Ohio. When I was in high school in the 70s, Dad said he'd just heard my favorite group on the radio, Carrying Grain. The band was Hall & Oates, and this gag perfectly sums up my father's sense of humor. Matt Rizzo, Eagan, Wisconsin. My father and I were in the snowplow. He drove for work when I saw a switch encased in a box. What's this for? I asked. To turn the red lights green, he replied. As we reached a red light, he pointed to the box. Try it. I hit the switch, and it worked. The light turned green. Only much later did I find out that it was a garage door opener. Heidi Berg, Rapid River, Michigan. If my father was in a doctor's waiting room and saw another old-timer looking dejected, he shuffled up and told him, A rabbit goes to the dentist, and the dentist says, I need a pull of tooth, but I'll give you Novocaine. The rabbit answered, Uh-oh, not me, Doc. I'm an ether bunny. Lisa Ann Taylor, Littleton, Colorado. My father liked to say, I'm bald because a good man always come out on top. Dad loved to make people laugh. At his funeral, the preacher said, In his lifetime, this man told thousands of jokes, but they were always the same one. MT via email. My dad was not a jokester, but his fun side did come out once in a while. When I was 12, he took me to his Chicago White Sox games with a group from the local tavern. The game between the Sox and the Indians was in the 10th inning. I'm sorry, it was in the 9th inning, with the Sox ahead by a run. I was having so much fun, I said, I hope the Indians tie the game in the 9th. The diehard Sox fans... I'm sorry, I just lost my page. Sorry about that. The diehard Sox fans we were with were horrified, but not Dad. He started cheering for the Indians to score, even as the men yelled, cut it out, you're a Sox fan. The Sox ended up winning. Everyone was happy, and my dad and I laughed all the way home. I miss him tremendously. Rick Brookman, Lemons, Illinois. It was a blustery day. You could be sure to hear my dad remark, it was so windy today I had to wrinkle my forehead and screw my cap on to keep it there. Johann Evan, Dawson, Minnesota. Here's my favorite dad joke. With me as the dad, every Sunday on the way to church we would have to stop at a railroad crossing, and each time I'd tell my 12-year-old daughter, a train just went by. Know how I can tell? It left its tracks. I got the moan the first couple of Sundays. After a while, every time we'd go to the crossing, all I had to do was look in the rearview mirror and she would smile. My daughter is now a college graduate and lives out of state, but every time I cross the tracks, I think of her. Mike Van Glow, Hiding, Michigan. My dad used to sing a little ditties. This was my favorite. There was a young lady named Mabel. She danced on the dining room table. Her face grew red when the gentleman said, look at the legs on that table. Old Dodge, Sacramento, Clo Dodge, Sacramento, California. What I remember most about my dad's jokes is my mother's reaction. While everyone else was howling at one of his punchlines, my mom would always respond, Bernard, no one thinks you're funny. Nita Crawley, Riverton, New Jersey. And from the Atlas of Apathy, Blandshire, Australia, a community of nearly 6,000 in New South Wales, is a sister community of Boring, Oregon, and Dull, Scotland. The group is affectionately called a Trinity of Tedium by a Scottish newspaper. Who knew? 13 incredible ways music benefits you. Number 1. Listening to happy music can work and help you complete tasks more quickly, especially if you're doing something repetitive such as checking email or filing documents. One study showed that the accuracy and efficiency of surgeons improved when they worked with the music of the choice in the background. Cornell University's researchers also found the upbeat tunes help workers cooperate and make group decisions that contribute to the good of the team. Number 2. Music decreases level of the stress hormone cortisol just as well as massage therapy does, according to a small 2010 study. Scientists randomly assigned anxious patients to listen to music either during massage therapy or while lying in a dim room. After 3 months, those who just listened to music experienced the same drop in anxiety as those who also got massages. But I bet the ones that got massages had more fun. Number 3. Listening to music before surgery has been shown to ease anxiety and limit the need for sedatives. After surgery, it helps reduce pain. An analysis of 73 studies published from The Lancet in 2015 confirmed that listening to music before, during, or after surgery improves anxiety and pain levels, which in turn means less pain medication. Number 4. People come up with more creative solutions when they listen to happy, upbeat music than when they sit in silence, according to researchers. From the Netherlands and Australia, it may be because music improves your brain's flexibility or because it relaxes you enough for the creative juices to flow. But don't play the music too loudly. Research also has found that moderate volume provides the creativity sweet spot. Number 5. When you listen to music, your brain releases dopamine, the same neurotransmitter that's released when you eat chocolate, have sex, or use cocaine. It's also associated with being in love. One small study found that just in anticipation of knowing the best part of a song is coming can get the dopamine flowing. Number 6. Feel like quitting a workout? Whether you're running, biking, or walking, you'll go farther if you pump up the jams. Studies have found music distracts you from your discomfort and motivates you to stay with the beat. The effect is so profound that the author of a 2012 review examining the psychological effects of music on exercise called music a type of legal performance-enhancing drug. Number 7. That rush of energy you get when you feel you can put your best power song is real. College-age men who were studied doing squats while listening to a favorite song took off more explosively and formed reps at greater speeds than those doing them in silence, one study found. People also sprint faster and hold heavier weights longer when listening to music. Number 8. Lullabies aren't just for babies. Listening to music before bed can help you fall asleep faster, wake up less often during the night, and feel more rested in the morning, according to the National Sleep Foundation. In one study conducted in Taiwan, seniors with sleep problems who listened to 45 minutes of soft, slow music before bed reported a 35% improvement in the duration of their shut-eye and less dysfunction throughout the day. Number 9. Music has been used to heal for centuries, and now we're learning why it works. The latest meta-analysis of 400 studies finds that listening to music promotes the body's production of an antibody called immunoglobulin A that attacks viruses and bacteria, as well as natural killer cells, which kill invading viruses and cancerous cells. Number 10. Time does fly when you're listening to music. Scientists have shown repeatedly that people judge a period of waiting as shorter when music is playing. Retailers use that to their advantage, playing music so you stay longer and spend more. For instance, more drinks and food are sold in bars and restaurants when music, especially slow music, is played, and grocery sales increase by 38% when the background music is slow. Number 11. Listening to music that brings you joy causes blood vessels to expand, increasing blood flow and improving cardiovascular health, a University of Maryland study found. The average upper arm blood vessel diameter of people in the study increased 26% after listening to joyful music. A separate review of 26 studies covering almost 1,400 heart disease patients found that music reduced heart rate, blood pressure, and anxiety. In one study, adults who focused on childhood melodies while receiving safe electric shocks decreased their pain by 17% overall. Other studies show that music may reduce pain for fibromyalgia and cancer patients. It works on kids, too. Children who listened to soothing and or upbeat music while having an IV inserted reported less pain and distress compared with those who had the procedure in silence, according to the study in JAMA Pediatrics. Number 13. Maybe you've heard about Alzheimer's patients coming alive when they hear a song from their past. Studies show that music helps them retrieve memories, communicate more effectively, and remember who they are. Singing is particularly powerful. George Mason University researchers demonstrated that Alzheimer's patients who regularly belt out their favorite may boost their cognitive functions over time. Weighing in. My wife caught me standing on the bathroom scale, sucking in my stomach. She laughed and said, "That's not going to help." "Sure it will," I replied. "It's the only way I could see the numbers." And with that, we will switch over to Grow Your Grill Skills in Consumer Reports. Our expert grilling advice, accessory recommendations, and charcoal grill ratings are all you need to keep the sizzle in your summer. Anyone can flip a burger or brown a bun on the grill, but to make the most of which is maybe summer's greatest pleasure, you want a top-rated model. In this issue, for the first time in decades, we're providing ratings on charcoal grills. And because even the highest-rated grill can't make up for a lack of technique, you might be looking to expand your grilling skill set. Learning how to make use of hot and warm zones on the grill, flavor with smoke, and get great results cooking meat, fish, and veggies over the charcoal or an open flame will broaden your backyard recipe repertoire. It's also a lot easier than you might think. For these and other strategies, we will make this grilling season sensational. We turn to two experts. Chris Lilly, a champion pitmaster who has won 15 World Barbecue Championships and is a partner at Big Bob Gibson's Barbecue in Decatur, Alabama, the Meathead and Meathead Goldman of AmazingRibs.com, and co-author of Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. That's in Rutsmarken, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, 2016. In addition to their tips for getting great results with both gas and charcoal, we bring you our own advice on grill maintenance and great new barbecue gear. Get ready to grill like a pro. Fire it up. Whether your grill is gas or charcoal, always take the time to get it good and hot before you begin to cook. You want to preheat your grill just as you do when cooking your oven, says CR Senior Test Project Leader Cindy Fisher. Preheating helps to achieve optimal temperature for grilling and to keep food from sticking to the grates, Fisher says. Our test on gas grills show that you should preheat for at least 10 minutes. For charcoal grill, our testers recommended using a chimney starter filled with coals and ignited by lighting crumpled newspaper or a fire starter below the chimney. Avoid lighter fluid and self-lighting coals, which can produce an off taste that distorts the flavor of your food. You want the coals to be fully lit and covered in a layer of fine white ash, Goldman says. Notice that the process takes about 15 minutes and is well worth the wait. Charcoal briquettes burn at their hottest and won't distort the flavor of your food with heavy smoke if you let them ignite fully. You never cook anything in your oven at 500 degrees Fahrenheit, but that's effectively what's happening when you turn on all of a grill's burners or distribute charcoal evenly across the bottom of the firebox. Instead, opt for a zone defense. On a gas grill, turn one or two burners on and leave the others off. For charcoal, light your coals, then push them all to one side of the grill. Use the hot side of the grill for searing and the cooler side for cooking meats and other foods, all the way through without burning. I'll cook chicken on the indirect side of the grill until it hits about 150 degrees Fahrenheit, then move it to the hot side to crisp up the skin and cook it through to 165 degrees Fahrenheit, Goldman says. He explains that the technique allows you to cook burn-prone foods like skin-on chicken over low heat, then finish on the hot side of the grill. Season with smoke. Smoke, from wood chips or chunks, is used by skilled grillers to impart even more flavor. I tell beginners to think of smoke as seasoning or a dry rub, says Lily. You want it to lend flavor, but not to overwhelm what you're cooking. Package instructions also call for soaking the wood chips or chunks before using them, but both of our experts agree that there's no need for this step. The chips barely absorb any of the water, and they quickly dry in the fire, anyway. If you're cooking with charcoal, simply throw the wood into the lit coals. In a gas grill, I like to use the wood chips in a smoker box, or put whole chunks of wood right on top of the shields that cover the grill's burners, Goldman says. Lily adds that the quantity and age of the wood typically influence flavor more than the wood variety, apple, cherry, or hickory, for instance, and that you need to experiment to get smoke just right, starting with small quantities and working your way up. I encourage people to try using wood local to their area, dried or seasoned, for at least 4 months after cutting, Lily says. You can also buy bags of pre-seasoned wood. Chunks burn longer and hotter, but Lily says he uses chips when smoking at a small grill because a chunk of wood that flares can raise the temperature too high. Gear for great grilling. The right accessories can elevate your grilling from average to amazing. Here are 6 tools tested and rated by our experts and an additional 5 they tried and liked to consider adding to your arsenal. Number 1, Weber Rib Rack. Weber's rib rack allows you to stand these racks of ribs on edge horizontally to free up real estate for other fire on your grill grates. Next Grill Grill Brush. Oh, by the way, the Weber brick rack is about $35. The Next Grill Grill Brush is $10. Our testers like this long-handled grill brush because it doesn't flex under pressure, and the metal blades cleaned effectively. A knob on the brush heads allows you to use 2 hands for extra leverage. Metal hooks can be used to scrape individual rungs of your grill grates, making this a solid choice for routine cleanings. Burrell King Basting Brush. We found that the generous handle on this heat-resistant, up to 500 degrees Fahrenheit, brush made it easy to keep hands away from the heat, even when basting foods near the back of a grill. You do, however, sacrifice some control due to the longer handle. Number 4. Charbroil-inspired silicone basting brush. The Snowfield brush and bowl combo has a favorite of our leaders. The short handle made the brush easy to control when slathering foods with sauce, and the bowl, shaped like a measuring cup, holds up to 8 ounces of sauce. Both are dishwasher safe. Hearthstone Grilling Cleaning Block. The replaceable cleaning blocks were exceptionally effective at restoring grates to their original condition, though you'll get only about 2 cleanings out of each stone, and they leave behind some residue that you need to wipe away. New stones cost $5 a piece, so this may not be the best source for a once a, maybe the best source for a once a season deep clean. Broil King Rib Roaster, $90. The Broil King's Rib Roaster lets you cook up to 3 slabs of baby back ribs on this porcelain-coated roasting box, which we found produced succulent and ribs and prevented the fat drippings from falling onto the coals or the gas burners, reducing the chance of flare-ups. Other favorites. 5 more tools that impressed experts. The KitchenAid Grill Skillet. To grill foods that are too small or fragile to place directly on the grill, the skillet fits the bill. Flames pass through the perforated base and lightly clear char shrimp, fish, veggies, and more. Broil King Silicone Side Shelf Mat. Broil King's dishwasher-safe grill mat keeps messy, slippery tools from messing up your grill side shelf and provides a slip-resistant surface for basting brushes, tongs, and thermometers. Charcoal Companion Flat Skewers. When you turn these easy-to-use stainless steel skewers, meat and veggies turn too, or opposed to spinning in place as often happens with cylindrical wooden skewers. Our testers loved how secure the skewers felt when turning, but the wide blades were tore through delicate veggies. Broil King Grill Tongs. Broil King's grill tongs have a clever design with a flat spatula-like surface on one side and traditional tongs on the other for a tool our testers found to be as handy as flipping burgers as fish as it was at turning hot dogs. Napoleon AccuProbe for $100. This meat thermometer attaches to the side of your grill with a powerful magnet and monitors the temperature of 2 different foods at once. It also uses Bluetooth and an app to send alerts to your smartphone when food is done cooking. Boy, that's sophisticated. And now that we're done eating, let's go on a road trip. In our new and exclusive ratings, you'll find road trip-worthy scores for the best SUVs, trucks, and cars for any vacation or journey. Plus, follow our strategies for how to prep and pack, how to pay less for gas, and how to keep everyone healthy, safe, and sane. There's a special romance attached to hitting the open road with love. One's aboard, carrying high hopes for a journey rich with vivid sights, great food, bonding with friends, and hiking, fishing, or sightseeing. In fact, nearly 2/3 of American families planning to travel this year. More than 56 million individuals are expected to take a road trip, according to the American Automobile Association. Choosing the perfect vehicle for this adventure is perhaps your most important decision, which is why our Consumer Reports has dug into our proprietary vehicle testing data and reliability and satisfaction to craft our first ever road trip worthy score for 50 vehicles across 6 categories. We factored in safety, comfort, fuel efficiency, and more, and we'll see those later. No 2 road trips are the same. For some, it's a couple of hours to a cozy bed and breakfast. For others, it's a multi-day cross-country trek to visit the grandparents. For the outdoorsy, it could involve camping. Theme parks, beaches, and state or national parks are consistently some of the most popular road trip destinations, says Julie Hall, Public Relations Manager at AAA. That's why our list of vehicles includes everything from sedans to trucks. Lisa Seethaler, a 51-year-old mother of 2 from Marlboro, Connecticut, is a fan of this vacation approach. Road trips are the best way to soak up local culture, flavors, scenery, architecture, and nature, she says. My Toyota Sienna minivan isn't glamorous, but it has a sunroof, great storage, and comfortable seats. The kids are happy in the back seat with a DVD player, and we often have our little dog in the third row. No matter what your destination, smart planning can increase your odds of avoiding mishaps, saving money, and arriving home with a happy memories. In this package, we thought of everything you'll need to make that happen. How to pack like a pro. Don't overload your car. Weight limits are listed on the driver's door jamb and in the owner's manual. The figure is for the combined weight of passengers and cargo. Don't exceed manufacturer's recommendations, which vary widely. A Chevrolet Equinox has a 993-pound limit, a Honda Odyssey 1,340 pounds, and a Buick Enclave 1,623 pounds. Stow the heavy items low, particularly in SUVs. This keeps the center of gravity lower, reducing the chances of a rollover. Smaller items should be packed into duffel bags or safely tucked into storage areas. Strap larger items down with cargo anchors. Don't place heavier items on top of the cargo pile because they can become dangerous projectiles in a panic stop or crash. You could opt for a roof cargo carrier, but CRTS found that a cargo carrier atop a mid-sized sedan can reduce fuel economy by as much as 5 miles per gallon. The pre-trip checkup. Your vehicle will be where you spend the bulk of your time during your journey, so make sure all of its functions are fine-tuned and operating to a maximum performance level. Under the hood, fluids. Check all levels, oil, coolant, brake, and windshield washer fluids. Inspect power steering and transmission fluid levels. If applicable, if you're taking a long trip, schedule a service appointment to double-check these levels. Hoses. Squeeze hoses with your thumb and forefinger near clamps. That's where they can be weakest from wear. Feel for soft or mushy spots. A good hose will be firm but bendable. Look for parallel cracks around the bends. A hardened glossy surface, which indicates heat damage, or abrasive damage have damaged hose replaced. Belts. Heat, oil, ozone, and abrasion can take a toll on belts. Look for cracks, fraying, and splits, as well as signs of glazing. Replace worn belts. Air filter. Remove the filter and hold it up to a strong light. If you don't see light, the filter is dirty enough to need to be replaced. A clean air filter helps the engine run better. Radiator. Look through the grill and be sure the radiator is clear of any obstructions. The battery. Make sure the terminals and cables are securely attached with no corrosion. If the battery has removable caps, check its fluid level, especially in warmer climates. Top off as needed with distilled water. Wipers. Based on CR test, windshield wipers last about 6 months. If they're a few months old, consider replacing them before a long trip. If the wipers are newer, clean the blades with a washer fluid or glass cleaner. Tires. Check the pressure on all tires, including the spare, before starting the trip. Use the pressure recommended by the vehicle's manufacturer, which can usually be found on a front door jamb and in the owner's manual. Inspect tires for abnormal or uneven wear, cracks, cuts, and any sidewall bulges. Replace tires that are 10 years old or overly worn. Once underway, check the pressure only after the tires have cooled for 3 hours to get an accurate measurement. Brakes. You might need a comprehensive checkup if you apply the brakes and there are grinding noises or unusual vibrations or in the brake pedal or the steering wheel or the vehicle pulls to one side. Glove box. Be sure you have up-to-date registration and insurance paperwork. Lights. Check exterior lights, including taillights, brake lights, turn signals, and fog lamps. Make sure lenses are clean so the lights are as bright as possible. Infotainment. Reduce distractions for your... Excuse me, let me start that again. Reduce distractions, pair your phones, and transfer your contact list ahead of time. Make sure the roadside assistance number is programmed. Confirm that any subscriptions for satellite radio, traffic services, and streaming music are up to date. Add radio presets and program all destinations before you hit the road. Your truly complete car emergency kit. Prepare for breakdowns and make sure you have these items on board. A phone charger. In addition to having on hand a charging cord and power adapter, carry a small battery-based charger in case your car battery dies. Basic tools. Have standard and Phillips screwdriver, pliers, and a compact socket set. Warning light, hazard triangle, and or flares. These can alert motorists to your presence along the side of the road. Tire tools. If you don't know how to change a tire, consider learning before the trip. You can pack an easier-to-use lug or torque wrench, as well as work gloves. A short wooden board about a foot long can be invaluable to stabilize a jack on a soft dirt or mud. Many newer cars don't have spare tires, so you may familiarize yourself with the Securus Mobility Kit. Know how to reach roadside assistance in case the tire can't be easily replaced. Flashlight. This or a head-mounted light can be especially helpful during nighttime breakdowns and tire changes. Jumper cables or a jump starter. Cables can be handy, but a paperback-sized jump starter can get your motor running on its own. Plus, many can be used to charge other portable devices. Reflective vest. This safety measure will make you more visible in the dark. Fire extinguisher. Pack a compact dry powder unit for fires fueled by solids and combustible liquids and gases, class ABC. Of course, the safer response may be to get passengers away from the vehicle and call 911. 6 tech chats to smooth your travels. Look into unlimited cell phone data. A road trip might be the perfect time for families to switch to an unlimited data plan. After all, a minivan's passengers usually don't have access to free Wi-Fi to look up directions, stream music, or share photos with friends back home, activities that can burn through monthly data plans. Pricing varies widely. At press time, AT&T, for example, had an unlimited monthly plan for four phones starting at $180. The company charged $190 for 20 gigabytes of shared data. On the other hand, unlimited probably doesn't make sense if you need only 1 gigabyte or 2 gigabytes per phone. Download Google Maps. Navigation apps have transformed travel, making it almost impossible to get lost. That is, unless you're out of cell range when you try to get directions, which can easily happen in rural or hilly regions. The problem isn't the GPS signal coming from satellites, which the phone can read nearly anywhere. It's the access to map and direction information via cellular. Solution. Download maps before you set out. Search for the spot where you'll be driving, say Livingston, Montana, on the outskirts of Yellowstone National Park. Then tap the name of the location. Next, tap More and click the Download button. Buy a multi-phone charger. Many drivers use a cable to charge a phone on their daily drive, but that's not enough for a family. Avoid squabbles by getting a charger with multiple USB ports. CR doesn't test car chargers, but as an example, the Archer 48W 4-port USB car charger, $16 at Amazon, can handle four phones at once, and it's Android and iOS compatible. Download movies before you go. Even if you're signed up for an unlimited data plan, that doesn't mean you'll have great service along every stretch of the road. Before you leave your home Wi-Fi network, you can pay to download movies and TV episodes through Amazon, iTunes, and other services. And Amazon Prime and Netflix allow subscribers to download many sites at no extra cost. To download a Netflix title to a phone or tablet, for instance, open the Netflix app, find your movie, click open the description window, and tap the download icon. It looks like an arrow pointing downward. Once the movie or TV episode is on your mobile device, you'll have anywhere from 48 hours to more than a week to watch it. The time frame varies by title. For more details on downloading videos, see the March 2018 Consumer Reports magazine, page 15, which we don't have available, I'm sorry. Don't overshare. Sure, you might want to post vacation photos online for friends and family to see, but sharing your Grand Canyon photos with the caption, "Just arrived, can't wait for tomorrow's hike," is a pretty indication to a crook that your house is empty. We recommend waiting if you can, or tightening up your sharing options on Facebook. For example, choose a photo and write your post, then tap on the Friends tab. That opens a drop-down menu where you can indicate who sees the post. Options range from everyone to an exclusive list that you've created, or even just a handful of individuals. Your close friends can see your pictures of a lifetime, and your other Facebook friends may many acquaintances don't know you left the house. Protect your privacy. Public Wi-Fi networks are notoriously unsafe. A hacker in the crowd may be able to intercept information going to and from your device. There are three solutions. Avoid doing sensitive things such as checking account balances or public Wi-Fi. Use a cellular connection instead of Wi-Fi. Nothing is perfectly safe, but it's much more difficult to hack a cellular connection. Or use a virtual private network, a VPN, a service that can encrypt your internet traffic and mask which sites you go to. CR doesn't rate VPNs, but one cited by security pros is TunnelBearer, starting at $5 per month. A free version limits to you 500 megabytes per month. Getting cash along the way. If you withdraw cash from an ATM that isn't your bank's network, you can end up paying extra fees. The combined out-of-network withdrawal fee can be as high as $5 per transaction. There are ways to avoid the fees. About 30% of banks offer accounts that allow you to use any ATM free of charge. The downside, you may have to maintain a minimum average monthly balance. Many credit unions are members of the Co-op Financial Services, a network of 30,000 ATMs that connects to credit unions across the country. There's no fee for withdrawing funds. Choose an online-only bank that allows you to use ATMs at many other banks at no cost. Number 4, brokerage firms such as E-Trade, Fidelity Schwab, and TD Ameritrade offer checking and savings accounts that often have no minimum balance requirements. The brokerage will give you a bank card and reimburse you for any ATM fees you're charged. When checking out some supermarkets and pharmacies, use your debit card and ask for cash back. Ways to keep your home safe while you're away. Good. Unplug window units or turn the thermostat up between 85 degrees and 90 degrees Fahrenheit to lower air conditioner cost. Better. Install smart thermostats with vacation scheduling, such as the Honeywell Lyric TFT5 at $100, a CR Best Buy. Good. Monitor your home remotely for leaks and flooding by installing a smart water shutoff valve and or leak detectors. Better. Turn off your home's main water line before you leave. Good. Use timers on a few interior and exterior lights to mimic your daily routine. Better, swap out a few bulbs with smart light bulbs that can mimic your routine but also randomize it a bit. Good, use this time to do a routine test of your smoke detectors. Replace batteries if necessary. Better, install a smart smoke detector which can alert you or someone back home to trouble via smartphone. Good, check that all exterior doors and windows are locked. Better, beef up each exterior door lock with a stronger deadbolt, such as a Medico Maximum 11603 and a box strike plate with 2 or 3 inch screws. Good. Ask a trusted neighbor to keep an eye on your home. And better, keep a virtual eye on your home by installing a wireless security camera or video doorbell. And let's close out today's program with a little humor in uniform. My granddaughter's husband was complaining about how spell check changes the meanings of emails when an Air Force officer told him this story. He sent a message to 300 of his personnel addressed to Dear Sirs and Ma'ams. It received as Dear Sirs and Mamas. As my supervisor and I left the headquarters building, the lawn sprinklers, which had been showering the walkway, stopped. After realizing that he had forgotten something, we bit back inside. With that, the sprinkler started again. There must be a motion sensor controlling the spray, we said, and decided to test it by walking in and out the front door. After several laps, I began looking around for the sensor. By the side of the building, instead of a sensor, I saw a very confused gardener, his hand on a water faucet. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next week. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.